7-Eleven has more drinks than times you've been caught singing in your car and random lyrics stored in your brain combined. Choose from Big Gulp flavors starting at 79 cents, like Fanta Orange, Minute Maid Fruit Punch, Powerade Mountain Berry Blast, Brisk Strawberry Melon Iced Tea, plus many more only at participating 7-Eleven stores. This summer, put on your favorite song and hit the road with a thirst-quenching Big Gulp drink starting at 79 cents today, plus taxes where applicable.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rustland, today we have Lee Tree Lynn.
Hello.
Of BFM. Great to have you here, Lynn. And we have a returning champion, producer, and all-round cool cat, did I say that right, Johnny Lee.
Hello, hello.
And so our three topics this week will be, topic number one is the Panama Papers and white lies. Topic number two is free ourselves of the shackles of cultural baggage with words. Hey, that's the shortest topic title we've ever had.
I know.
And finally is, topic number three is personal histories. What are they good for? And so, Johnny, Panama Papers recently came out exposing that an awful lot of people, including prime ministers, have been sequestering their money in offshore accounts. And the Prime Minister of Iceland has just stepped down because he was implicated. And so, white lies.
So how does it connect? For me, I think that where it is right now, it came from a starting point. And I think we all tell lies at one point in our life. Whether we want to or it's intentional, it just comes out. It's part of life. And I question myself all the time whether that white lie that I just told yesterday, whether that was offensive or whether that was beneficial at all. And I always like kind of get paranoid and wonder about that and like, oh, will I do that again? Should I do that again? And I wonder how it's accepted in today's society and what do people think about white lies?
Are you worried that you're going to get, because this is the first tranche with the Panama Papers, more names are going to be named. Are you worried that your name's going to be on that list, Johnny? Are you preparing us for to find out that you actually got offshore accounts and stuff in Panama?
That's the only reason why I'm on the show, just to come out clean.
Okay.
Breaking news.
That's fair enough. I mean, this is how you cleanse your soul, Cam. But is the concern here then that you start off with one white lie and then it just snowballs and then suddenly you are a liar?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, often white lies are not supposed to be hurtful, but then you get really good at lying. And then what happens when you become a really, really, really good liar? And then you get confident with that, and then you can feel you can get away with murder.
Well, and you would believe, presumably you believe the lie. I've been quizzing Johnny before the show to find out if he's ever made a great big lie. And as far as we can tell, unless he's lying enormously, he's led an exemplary life and he's never had to make a horrible lie. But you make white lies, you say.
Are you a good white liar? That's what I want to know.
I sure hope so. I mean, I love.
Do you like this show?
I like the attention that comes from being able to boast about it. I remember when I was younger, my parents asked me why I smelled of cigarettes. And I just told them that it was because all the boys at the Sabre Cafe were smoking, and that's why I reeked of cigarette smoke. I don't think it was hurtful or it was a flat-out lie, but it kind of comforted them.
But it was self-protecting, right? I mean, but that's the thing about lies half the time. It starts off as self-protection or it's self-serving. I mean, even the whole white lie thing, you could argue that it's in service of, you know, making the other person feel better, but you could also argue that it's for you to avoid a difficult situation. Do I look fat in this? No. Never. And you know, and part of it is you don't want whoever's asking you that to feel fat, but it's also that you don't want to have to explain what you mean. If you did say, maybe change, maybe that's not the right dress today.
I think in the case of Panama Papers, though, I to be fair to these people, I don't think that they ever really made a lie. I don't think anyone ever asked them, do you have offshore accounts? And then they said no, and then we discovered they did.
So you don't consider lies of omission lies?
Sometimes I would say no. I mean, if you're not asked that question directly, then Bill Clinton, when he
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
So his argument being he didn't actually say which woman he meant when he said that. but also ever since the Lance Armstrong thing, which I've mentioned so many times on this show, I am very fascinated by liars. And how they lie and how to detect liars.
See, I don't think it's fair to say that no one ever asked them, therefore they're not lying. I mean, I think often silence can be a lie. I mean, you don't know whether I'm a murderer or not right now, and that's only because you haven't asked me. But it doesn't mean that I wouldn't be living a lie if I did have, you know, bodies stashed away in a freezer somewhere.
So are you a murderer, Lynn?
The question is not whether I'm a murderer. The question is whether or not I'm a liar and whether or not I'm a good diverter of topics, which is what I've just done. Do I have bodies?
You wouldn't be a liar in that case. If I hadn't asked you, I mean, you know, you just carry on your life. You were living a lie, I guess, you could say.
Yeah, and then that doesn't make me a liar just because I'm living a lie?
Okay. Well, actually, I think your topic is going to answer that question.
I'm more concerned of why liars often have a bad rep, because sometimes you can lie for the benefit of others, and then it goes back to the next topic, which is whether words have cultural baggage. And, you know, lying is obviously associated with ethics.
Mm. Right? Lying is bad, Johnny. It's bad. It makes you a bad person.
Are white lies bad?
That's the whole point of the conversation.
Yeah, I've got so many come to mind that I've said, and I've also said big fat horrible lies. But I'm a very bad liar. It comes across my face. But can I just mention Lance Armstrong? I think what he did was, in his lying, he constructed a different version of himself than the one that did actually exist in reality. And that version was a really great person. He did great things for charity. He won so many prizes. People admired him. He felt justified in that he was giving people this fabulous icon. I don't agree with him one little bit. So he was actually, by lying, he was creating a gift for humanity.
I take so much offense to this.
I agree.
Yeah, no, because for me, I think that, and this is the whole thing, right? I'm not saying that we need to live in a world without white lies at all, because I do think our society would crumble. I'm not sure we can function if we didn't kind of have a little bit of social lubricant. And I think a part of that is telling white lies, you know, on a day-to-day basis. No, you weren't annoying. No, that doesn't make you look fat. No, of course not. Of course I'm fine. You know, and these things just kind of help your day move along. But it doesn't change the fact that I think all lies are self-serving, and the bigger ones are even more so. You know, Lance Armstrong, he did all that so you would adulate him. It doesn't mean that he gave us a gift, you know. It meant that he got the gift of being loved.
Yes.
I can't imagine the world having truth Tourette's, you know. That would be a horrible place to live in.
Well, quite the opposite of that. Was a very bad movie with Ricky Gervais.
Oh, yes, that was awful.
I cannot remember its name.
You don't have to.
It was like, it was set in a world where nobody lied. And it was very dull. I mean, the world that they created was dull. But then also the comedy was sucked out of it because...
Because it's literal.
Yeah, and actually so much comedy, perhaps all comedy, mm-hmm. is about the lie, is about making a lie. And then being found out. So, you know, we wouldn't have comedy if we didn't have lying.
Or offshore accounts.
Well, if you say that, though, Cam, can you say that Adam and Eve and original sin is kind of comedic in nature because she lied to God as we know it?
I'm sure we could make a comedy out of that.
Coming to you, 2017.
Yeah.
Director Cam Roslin.
Yeah. But we're going to move on. But first of all, so Johnny, you don't lie. So you have nothing to lie about.
Oh, I never lie.
Okay, great. And so moving on, cultural baggage and language with Lee Chui Lin.
Yeah. Okay, well, when you announce it like that. I've been reading a lot about this, about the word entitled. You know, we use it a lot and it's always an insult. You say somebody is entitled and you're referring to some, you know, crazy millennial Kim Kardashian type, and that's how that word is used. When if you think about what the word actually means, it's a positive thing. You know, when you're entitled to something, it can be a positive thing. I guess freeing it of cultural baggage means freeing it of both negative and positive. But entitled on its own just means that you deserve something, you know. And so, for example, I would say I'm perfectly entitled to be at this show, you know, because I work here, because I have things to say, because I have been on it several times, because Cam keeps asking me back for some reason, even though I insult him, you know, and so that there is where my sense of entitlement comes from. But for some reason, when you refer to a person as having a sense of entitlement, it's almost always negative. And I don't think that should be the case. And I think we should make an argument for using words for their original meaning, almost as if we're not native English speakers, almost as if we were people who learned the word afresh.
I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to neutralize the name Hitler. If I named my son Hitler Lee, I don't know how he would be accepted in school.
You could turn it into an adverb. Man, he's doing that really Hitlerly. It would be excellent.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's all about context, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned the same word in different contexts, and it means different things.
I suppose so. I mean, in all fairness, it kind of comes, it's been coming through from personal experience. You know, I've just had a number of friends who've been going through a little spot of heartbreak recently. And when you talk to them about what they're going through and you tell them, you know, now is the time to be selfish. Or when people tell them that they're picky, that was the other word that I brought up earlier. You know, when people say that, now's the time to be picky. It's always, people recoil from words like selfish and picky because it comes with that context of, what do you mean? You know, am I selfish? Did I cause everything to crumble? I'm picky. That's why I'm going to die alone. And if you free it of all those different things and you just look at the word, it's meant in the most positive possible light. You know, selfish, choose yourself. Be picky. That's fine. You know, you're allowed to be picky because you know what you want.
Lynn, are we really talking about freeing words from cultural baggage? Are we talking about something else here?
Freeing the soul.
Well, we are. I really do mean freeing words from cultural baggage because I have these conversations and get frustrated because I know that I'm being accurate. And I feel like I'm being held back, you know, by people kind of assuming what I mean from baggage.
I think it's an issue of semantics. And one of the most misconstrued words is the word interesting. So if I ask someone what they think about maybe something I've cooked, they might say, well, it's interesting. Yeah. And I never take it as a compliment. They're trying to tell a white lie.
A terrible white lie.
Oh, yeah. That actual word, with my wife when I went to Chinese New Year the first time, and I was thinking, yay, Chinese food. But it's not the Chinese food that I like. It was all just brown stuff, and it was just not very nice.
Was it interesting?
It should have been.
Yeah, and they kept offering it to me, and I said, this is really interesting. Now, I mean, don't ever serve me this stuff ever again. But they took it to mean, quite literally, that I found it to be interesting. So the next year, when I turned up, they were convinced that I absolutely loved the food because I'd said that it was interesting. So, Johnny, I understand you entirely.
So earlier we said we didn't want to live in a world where honesty prevails, right? Where everybody is just honest all the time. And I think we can all agree on that. But do we not want to live in a world where everything that we say is exactly what we mean? I mean, in this context, where you use the word exactly as you want it to be used. I mean, I really don't see a problem with
no,
that.
No, but Lynn, if you say to me, I don't know what...
That context. Shirt is interesting.
No, we were talking about earlier, though, about, you know, saying it's okay to be selfish.
Right.
Right? In the context that you're explaining it to me, I would understand that you mean just to stand up for yourself and to be assertive and have confidence, et cetera, et cetera. And that's a great thing. Yes, it is a good thing. But if I am me, Cam Ruslan, if I'm entitled to certain discount property and certain investment schemes that you are not entitled to, Lee Chui Lin, is that a good thing?
See, again, I think we're attaching good and bad to a word that just has a meaning. You know what I mean? So like, I just think that I don't have a problem with you saying that sentence because it is accurate. It's true. I sound like some sort of crazy language person right now, but I just think there's nothing wrong with precision.
I feel that a lot of times people take words too literally. I think you have to look at the heart behind it. I'd rather have someone say, I flip and love you, rather than say, I love you in a very cheesy way. I think a lot of times people take disagreeing as arguing, and I think people just need to step up in their communication skills and how they listen and body language, eye contact.
I guess that makes sense because the other thing that could happen is that you could say selfish. I mean, because this is what's happened to me, right? Like where I say to somebody, be selfish, or I describe them as picky, and then I have to spend 20 minutes explaining what I mean. And so I guess what I'm complaining about in a certain sense is I would like to remove that 20 minutes. And what you're saying is that 20 minutes is fine. That's part of
it. And I have to say, I'm really not quite sure what the 20 minutes is about.
The 20 minutes is spent explaining why selfish is not how it's popularly understood. I'm not applying
in that
it
in context.
Exactly.
But there are times, surely, Lee Chui Lin, when, you know, someone is selfish and they're doing something selfish and you want to say it's selfish and you mean it as in like you're doing a bad thing.
Which is still accurate.
Yes, okay. So but it depends in the context.
It does.
And you know...
It does, but I think people are using words now. Overwhelmingly, some words are becoming, again, overwhelmingly negative. You know, by and large, people kind of shy away from using certain words now.
Oh, okay.
Because they have negative baggage. So that's what I'm saying.
All right. Like, we're casting aside too many words by associating them with pejoratives as opposed to any sense of ennoblement.
For me, I get insulted when people listen to jazz and they say it's Starbucks music because jazz music came from slavery and from suffering. And so for me, it's like, I want to take that word jazz back and for the people.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, jazz, yeah, jazz is all right. I'm a jazzy kind of guy.
Okay. Great ending.
Jazz hands. Jazz hands.
Okay.
Jazz.
All right. So
strong closing, Ken.
So Lynn, I guess I just have to be careful how I speak to you in future.
Well, some would say that that is par for the course, Ken.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So I'm going to selfishly stop this now, and we're going to move on. And in a moment, though, we shall return with part three here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Lee Chui Lin, and Johnny Lee. And now, at topic number three, there's a guy I used to know, who is an orphan. And in many ways, he's a very remarkable guy. In many ways, he's a deeply messed up guy. But when I was talking to him about his orphanness, because he kind of looks Indian, but kind of looks Malay, and you really couldn't tell by the look of him, and he doesn't know. He has absolutely no idea. But as I was talking to him, he had a lack of a personal history. Yes, he had the history of his own lifetime, but he didn't have the baggage of generations and ancestors past and knowing where he came from. And as I was speaking to him, I felt, on the one hand, jealous of him, that he had that freedom. On the other hand, deeply sad, because I suddenly saw all the personal histories that have come in my lifetime, you know, that my forebears, I have people who fought on the Western Front in the First World War, my mother's side, my father's side, Kuala Kangsa, doing all those things. And I didn't necessarily always feel much connection to them, but they're there. And I wonder if having that baggage, that personal history, is a good thing or a bad thing. Because, you know, sometimes you can use that weight of history as being something that defines who you are and makes you perhaps seem bigger in this world than you really are. Whereas this guy I know, if he makes it in life, he will be a genuinely self-made man. And I would have the most respect possible for him, because I think, having met him, I am not a self-made man. I'm just filled with certain entitlements and...
Well, how would you define self-made? I mean, because even if you come from, even if you have a whole host of, you know, little bags that you're carrying around with you that come from your family history and so on, that doesn't necessarily have to mean anything, does it? I mean, it means what it means to you. You could still be self-made.
But I've had so many leg ups, you know, help along the way.
He might have had in his own way.
Hmm. I don't know, Johnny, are you a self-made man? Let me ask you a different question. Do you feel within yourself that you're carrying this history of the Lees going back for centuries?
I don't know much about the Lees, but I always feel that you can leverage off your past mistakes if you admit it, and then you come clean and you say, you know what, I messed up, but I'm going to learn from that.
No, but that's in your own lifetime.
Right.
Right? I'm talking about beyond your lifetime.
Well, I think you can choose to...
Are you divorced from that?
Be aware of it.
You're aware of it.
But I don't...
But you don't... It doesn't define who you are.
I don't feel connected a lot of times to who they were, but I do feel connected to the struggles, maybe coming on a boat from China, from wherever, and maybe hustling in the tin mine or what have you. And I feel that hard work and, you know, putting your back in it is part of my DNA, and that's something I can leverage off, I think.
Okay.
So I do... I mean, when we were talking about it earlier and listening to you talk about it as well, I was just reflecting on how important it is for me to have an understanding of my family and my place in my family. You know, we're very close-knit, so it matters to me. It was something that I was very aware of growing up, that if I did have children, that that I would not be passing my name down to them, and therefore that in some senses my father's line is ending with me, because he has two daughters. You know, he's got me and my sister. And so in some ways, I always thought that was the end of that. And my sister and I have actually had conversations that I can remember dating back to our early teenage years, I think, about this, about, well, that's sad. Maybe we should, you know, maybe we'll marry people who will let us, you know, have the Lee name in there somewhere, or maybe we'll double barrel it, you know. And so in that sense, and Lee is like the most common Chinese surname, and Chinese people are the most populous people in the world. So it's not exactly as if Lee is like some dying name that needs preservation, but it doesn't mean that I don't think about it in that context. So it's weird, but it does matter to me. I don't know how it informs my life, but it comes comes up in these weird little volcanic eruptions like that, you know, of me thinking, I want little baby Lees.
I also feel that the term self-made has a lot of unnecessary hype. And then in the day and age of the entrepreneur being, you know, idolized, and you have Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg, I feel that end of the day, no one is really self-made. We still stand on the shoulders of giants, like with technology advancements and other people.
Okay, I agree with you. But I mean, in the case of Donald Trump, say, I mean, I have no respect for that man whatsoever, because he's inherited $25 million from his father, and now he's a rich man. I mean, whoopee, well done. Whereas I'd say, on a slightly different strand, my uncles, my Malay uncles, you know, I remember once they, you know, said to me, looking me very squarely in the eye and saying, you know, it's important that you know where you came from. And I would say, well, no, because I come from places you don't know. But also, I do know where I came from because I've read the history. I know history very well. So I probably know more about the history than you do. So knowing the history, but not necessarily feeling emotionally connected to the history, isn't that okay? Or should I feel it on some stronger level?
I feel like this is all part of the building of a personal mythology of Cam Razlan. This guy, your friend, is friend a fair word? This person that you used to know, he comes with a very specific... I mean, even your opening words were so portentous when you were talking about him. I know a guy, he is an orphan. Thunder, lightning, you know, it's and so he, in some ways, he comes with his own ready-made Batman story or Superman story or any other, Superman's unfair, Batman story or any other fairy tale that starts with an orphan, you know, in some ways that personal mythology is built in a specific set. So I think he comes with his own kind of set of personal history as much as you do. It's just that his is culturally informed, maybe. Is that fair? I mean, to me, that's how I'm reading it.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, you hurt my feelings, but it's fair.
No, it's just, do you know what I mean, though? Like, because I do think that...
you mean it is its own cultural heritage?
In its sense, in a sense, because, yes, you know, orphanhood comes with that to a certain degree.
Okay, I mean, he has something which I think, which I understand also. He has a real deep desire to be a member of community. But it's not necessarily the communities that we define on paper here. I mean, his IC says Hindu, but you know, he really doesn't know. But he finds his own communities, and we all do. I think that's something that we would all share in common, is that we find our own communities and we want to be members of that community, and then we find our history with that community. And those are not the usually defined ones, Malaysian definition, the cliché definitions.
I'm more interested in the idea of independence and how there's such a... We put people who are truly independent on a pedestal, and I think interdependence is much harder in a time where maybe I'm starving and I do want to be a self-made man, but I realize that collaboration is another bomb-laden field, and it's something that I'm trying to understand living in Malaysia and in Kuala Lumpur, where I realize being independent is not as easy as the idea, and it's definitely easier to be independent maybe in a Scandinavian country, but being in Malaysia, I still have to, you know, hang out, not necessarily hold hands with certain people, but I need to hang out.
Right.
I feel like what you're describing, Cam, is this desire for a blank slate, you know, because that's in some ways what he has, right? He's able to, that idea of going out and creating community, you're doing that now without anything, you know, you're starting and you're really kind of creating your own interests, whereas you, with your Malay uncles telling you, remember where you came from. You have a certain basis. I mean, even if you rebelled from that statement, that rebellion is a direct reaction to somebody having told you something, and that somebody having told you something comes from your own personal history.
Mm.
Yeah, whereas I embrace it. I'm super happy to have my history. I do think it comes from having just a really happy family. I mean, I love it. I love that I have that, whatever you want to call it, baggage is fair, history is fair. I like that it informs me as a person. Yeah, and at the same time, I don't feel envy for your friend. I just think he just has a whole different set of tools to work with.
Mm. Well, we should end on that upbeat note there that you've supplied, thankfully, without on this occasion hurting my feelings. Well done, Lynn.
I can, you know, do that from time to time, Cam. It's not easy, but I try.
Right. And so now we're going to move to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And Johnny Lee's going to go first.
I'm going to recommend a band called Spectre, and they've got a great song called All the Set Young Men. And one of my favorite lines is, "We are beautiful now like they were beautiful then," and sung in a really sad, morbid way. And I think it somehow resonates with me trying to be independent in an interdependent society.
Producer Daryl, can we play out with that song? Yeah, it's not naughty or anything, is it?
It's naughty if you want it to be, Cam.
Oh, okay. Well,
anything is.
Well, okay.
Free the word naughty. Free the shackles.
Okay, so that's Spectre, the band Spectre, and the song is?
All the Sad Young Men.
All the Sad Young Men, which we will play out with this episode. And Lynn, what's your recommendation?
I've been having a hard time settling on a book this year for some reason. I've been kind of wandering around bookless and sad and starting and stopping. And I finally found one that I've really been able to get into recently. So it's Susan Orlean's The Orchid Thief. And it's a very slender piece of nonfiction. It's very beautifully written. It's about an orchid thief who's working in Florida where orchids are protected and where orchids grow and flourish. And they're protected in this sort of little swamp area called the Fakahatchee Strand. And it follows the adventures and misadventures of John LaRoche, who is sort of a scoundrel character who manages to do really bad things but also be really self-serving, who manages to inject all his, you know, weirdest schemes with this tiny sliver of, you know, altruism. And he's a fascinating character, but it also goes into the history of orchid collecting. And I didn't know that there was so much about it, you know, that there was so much, you know, that people have died, new lands have been discovered, that orchid collection was what it was. And it's really fascinating, really beautiful. And there was a movie also about the adapting of the book to screen called Adaptation, which some people might have seen.
I cannot begin to imagine what this book is about. You say it's non-fiction.
It's non-fiction, and it's about a man who's an orchid thief. Okay. But it's also about the history of orchids as a plant, as an object of fascination. And it's about this man and his desire to steal orchids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's great.
Right. Well, we have orchids in this part of the world, so...
We do, yeah.
So, okay. The Orchid Thief by...
The Orchid Thief by Susan Orlean. Orlean like New Orleans, but without the S.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my recommendation is, it's kind of one that I've done before, but I would really want to do it again, because, like Lynn, I've been struggling to find my book, and I did. I went and bought a John le Carré book, and he's so good. John le Carré, one of the great master writers, living writers, who writes a lot about, you know, espionage. But it's not kind of kiss, kiss, bang, bang stuff like James Bond. It's internal monologue about keeping secrets, about lying.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was one of my favorite films of the year that it came out. It was so good.
Did you read the book?
No, that's the thing. And I mean, I understand that I really wanted to after I watched the movie, though. I know I'm doing it in reverse, but that was such a beautiful, quiet, understated movie about espionage. And I found it so absorbing. It was excellent.
I'm actually not keen on the movie.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think the book is
better.
It's better. It's different. It's fuller. And also the movie, Uma was talking highly about it. It looks like it's shot in Stockholm, which is like,
I think it was directed by a Scandinavian director.
Well, there you go.
Well, all right.
But it was a good film. It was okay. But the book is really great. So, you know, check it out. So anyway, I bought one of his books called A Most Wanted Man, which is also made into a movie, directed by a photographer fellow.
Anton Corbin.
Anton Corbin, of all people. And the bizarre thing with his adaptation is he actually kind of removed the central character, which is rather odd. But it's a really good book, and it just, once you get into Le Carré world, it's just you're home. So I want to recommend again John Le Carré, great author. So that's my recommendation. And so so now only remains for me to thank special honored guest Johnny Lee.
Goodbye, everybody.
Lee Trelin.
Thank you.
Entitled Lee Trelin.
Yes, I am.
Non-lying Johnny Lee. And historyless Cam Raslan. We're going to play out with Johnny Lee's recommendation, which is Spectre, the band Spectre, with the song...
All the Sad Young Men.
All the Sad Young Men. And please join us on our Facebook page, group thing, which is producer Daryl, a little bit moribund, but we'll see about that. Twitter feeds, mine's at Cam Raslan, Lindsay's.
Well, I've been saying to look me up on Instagram where because, you know, free word shackles, use less words apparently is my thing. So Instagram, you can look me up at Schmurls, S-C-H-M-U-R-L-S.
Johnny, are you on Instagram or anything? You're a hip guy.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
What's your Instagram called?
It's Johnny, J-O-N-N-Y underscore Lin, L-I-N.
Okay. All right, check that out.
Scope it out.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. And listen to it. You can download our podcast by going to, and I'm gonna read producer Daryl's lips again. Listen to our podcast at bfm.my/abitculture, all one word. I got it that time. And so, thank you for joining us, and please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
7-Eleven has more drinks than times you've been caught singing in your car and random lyrics stored in your brain combined. Choose from Big Gulp flavors starting at 79 cents, like Fanta Orange, Minute Maid Fruit Punch, Powerade Mountain Berry Blast, Brisk Strawberry Melon Iced Tea, plus many more only at participating 7-Eleven stores. This summer, put on your favorite song and hit the road with a thirst-quenching Big Gulp drink starting at 79 cents today, plus taxes where applicable.